Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's November 18th, 2011, and you're listening to the finest PokerCast, the longest running show on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long. Just when I thought crappy No Limit Hold'em could not get any crappier.
Oh, no.
I find out that it can be.
You didn't heed my warning, did you?
No, I did heed your warning.
Oh, you did?
And I'm going to stop short of hating you because probably end up losing less money than if I didn't heed your warning, but I am just really stuck. All right? So, you know, as the listeners know, once a month when the proofs are ready for the magazine, I take them out to my local poker room, and I proof them when I'm playing some cards. About the only time I get out to play cards anymore. I try to enjoy it.
Right.
And normally I try to play the tournament, because I like tournaments more than, obviously, the crappy No Limit Hold'em cash games. But, you know, we got the Thanksgiving holiday coming up, so we're expediting stuff today, or this issue. And so you gave me the proofs last night on a Wednesday. And, of course, my local poker room, the tournament on Wednesday night, is $210 buy-in.
Man.
All right, now, I'm no longer scared of the $210 buy-in, so I was flirting it with it a little bit. But certainly it's a stretch for me, you know. So I don't just go in there and plunk down two big bills. But the last month when I went, I played the 1-2 no limit and dropped three bills.
Right.
And by playing pretty good, I thought. I don't think I made any mistakes. It's just one of those days you just, the ball bounces the wrong way, right?
Yep.
So I'm faced last night with a decision. Should I go and take another shot at the 1-2 no limit game, which actually I've been doing pretty well at anyhow, so I'm not results oriented on last month. Or do I take a big shot at this $200 tournament that top prize is like $4,000? And wow, wouldn't that be a great way to start the show? But then I decide, and you're like, oh no, go cash. And so then I'm like, you know, I'm sitting there, I got to proof the pages. I can get away with not paying attention in a $40 or $60 tournament.
Yeah.
But in a $200 tournament, I think I need to be paying attention, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I should be worrying about whether how many eithers or boasts that Lee Child's worked into his column this month. So I heed your advice, and I'm like, you know what? I'm going to try the 1-1 no limit tonight. Maybe that's a little less variance in it. You know, I'm not going to get these big pots where I play well and lose three big bills. And so I thought I'd do that, right? So I go up, they immediately have a seat, I give them $100, and they're like, no, the max buy-in is 60.
Yep.
I'm like, okay, that's right, I forgot.
Yeah.
All right, well, great, hey, now the worst I can lose every time I get one lucky is 60 bucks. So I buy in, and I got to tell you, Chris, the 1-1 is the new 2-4 limit. And both hilariously and accurately. I mean, they don't spread a 2-4 limit there anymore. So all those players are now in the 1-1. And it plays almost like a 2-4 limit game. For the first six hands, there were a raise. The max raise was $3 pre-flop.
Hey, it's three times big blind.
Five times it was $2. I don't know what anybody's trying to accomplish by raising $2 in a 1-1 game, but that's what they're doing. So, and the more I played, I realized this, again, just like the 2-4 limit, this is a game that cannot be beaten. People would not give up their chips, so the pots were really small. Your only thing you could hope for is to get two monster hands, and of course that happened twice, and guess who was on the losing end of that? So I don't know. It's just you know, of course, you know, and you know, I love the dealers there, so I probably tip more than the normal player, so that probably ate into the added to the loss a little bit, but that's fine. I don't mind that. But I don't know, that game can be beaten. So now I gotta to be on my A game to play the 1-2 and not get fleeced, or hope for a lower buy-in tournament, which obviously is a high-risk proposition as well, too, which we'll talk about in our next item.
Or you could proof the pages at home, do them properly, you know, finish them, right, then go and play poker.
I should play an 8-game mixed tournament on PokerStars. But no, I can't!
Oh, no, wait, let's talk about the 1-1 as a new 2-4, though, for a minute.
Yeah, it's absolutely.
All right, so you said the standard raise early on was 3X, right?
Well, 2 to 3X.
2 to 3X. And then, what, everyone would come along, too? Is that another facet of this?
Well, we towards the end of the night, we had a lot more family pots. But, yeah, generally 5 or 6 to the flop.
Okay.
Which is really unheard of in No Limit. Not unheard of, but...
It's just rare.
Not usual, right? You know, and here's a couple of things that I experienced last night that I was frustrated about. All right, so, you know, I watched this for a while, right? And, you know, I don't get involved in too much. You know, it's just kind of playing Titan Proof and Pages. And then I get Pocket Kings under the gun.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do with that hand in this?
Oh, yeah, it's a good question because if you make it 10... You know, everyone's going to be like, whoa, what the hell? And they're not going to call you. And
it's going to turn to kryptonite.
Yeah. And if you make it 3, you're going to pick up 10 hitchhikers.
Right.
Yeah. That's a good question. I don't know. I think it's a good question. I think that I would – well, if I was playing this game, I would raise what I want to raise anyway. I wouldn't just, so I would probably still make it like 6. And then if I get 4 or 5 callers, then I have to adjust. But – I wouldn't go 2 or 3 like everyone else. Just because they're doing it doesn't mean that's how I want to play the game. I want to open that game up. So probably, you know, 5 or 6.
I made it 5, and I got 3 callers with that, which, you know, at least I'm building a pot, I guess, at that point. I mean,
yeah.
But I don't know. That's not great. And, of course, the flop came with a jack. The turn was a jack, and the woman slow played a boat on me. And
yeah, of course.
Of course, I didn't lose a lot because she just called all my bets. She never raised me with a boat. which is the other thing, too. I mean, this is what I'm talking about. The players, I mean, I watched, for the first 10-20 hands, I watched people make serious call-to-time decisions with, like, third pair.
Jeez.
So I'm like, all right, well, I could beat this game if people are really anguishing over calling with third pair, right?
Right.
And get 2 pair, and I'm going to get them. And, of course, every time I got the 2 pair, somebody had a straight or something like that. So, and of course, it was a short session. But, I mean, I really, for a while, halfway through the session, I was like, you know what? I want to find a way to beat this game. There's got to be a way that I can adjust to win this game. And by the end of the night, I just couldn't figure it out.
Hmm. It always feels like when you have calling stations like that, that you just have to play the best hand. You know what I mean? You have to make the nuts. And I understand about preflop, that's the bigger issue here, probably.
Well, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But, I mean, I have no problem with making it 5 or 6, and then if I get a couple of callers and they're all unders, betting it big on that flop, and then that way you discourage, hey, the jack gets there, but, you know, I mean, I don't know. And then if it's something over, you can get away from it, because, you know, all those people are just with any ace or calling with any ace. So if there's an ace on the board, then let it go. But, yeah, I guess it's a feel for the table. It's hard to just sit here and talk about it. There's something else to be said, too. If you knew that there was someone in there who was going to raise, maybe limp with them. Because if you're not getting the desired effect anyway with a raise, then you might as well just
limp. To be honest, I limped a lot. I limped with ace-king a lot, and then the flop missed, and, you know, I could throw it away. And, of course, I do that a lot in the 1-2 anyhow.
Yeah.
I do think ace-king's overrated, and, you know, if I hit it hard, then it's disguised, and if not, then I'm fine throwing it away. So I did that for a while, too. But, you know, I guess here's the thing. I mean, and you tell me that all the time when we go and travel and I end up having to play No Limit because that's what they have. And then I hit a big hand and I stack someone. And then you're like, hey, that's why I play No Limit. And you're right.
Yeah.
That's the advantage of No Limit, is that you play well and you get a big hand. And it's like craps when you hit a bunch of numbers in a row.
Yeah.
But when you miss all the numbers, then you lose a lot. So that's the yin and yang of it. But in this game, there just were never any big pots. I mean, I think the biggest single bet that I saw the entire night in 4 hours was $20.
Oh, man. Oh, biggest bet. Not biggest pot, but biggest bet.
Single bet, yeah.
Yeah, wow.
And that was rare. I mean, I think after that, it was probably 15. Mostly, most hands, the biggest bet I saw were like 10. So, I mean, we're not talking big pots where you're, and there's not a lot of money on the table, so you're not stacking people. And in that case, then you got to factor in the rake and, you know, all that kind of stuff. It's a really unique game. I don't know.
It sounds like
down and play it again.
It sounds like they're tight. If they're tight, then maybe you can push them around once you get your stack big enough.
I thought about that, too, because I had a couple hands where I had, like, Jack 10, and I limped in, you know, hey, for a buck, I'll take a shot, and then got three 10s. And, you know, waited the turn to raise, and then they, you know, gave me that look like, they looked down at the cards three times, like the cards are going to change, and then they folded.
Yeah.
And, of course, you know, I could do that because I had the three tens, but then I started thinking, you know, maybe do I need to do this more often with anything and really kind of force them. But, you know, here's the problem with those kind of players is they'll, like I said, they'll call you down with third pair or... They'll wake up with a big hand. It's just so unpredictable.
Yeah.
And that's the worst kind of poker to play is against people that are unpredictable.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you just got to wait for the nuts for the most part and punish them for being calling stations, really.
All right, well, one more issue before we move on that happened last night. I don't think it's a big deal, but I thought it was interesting to talk about. There is a, you know, they have their normal high hand promotion going on, and a player at the table hit... I think quad jacks or something, and got $75 or something, right? So they called the floor over to verify it, and then they went to get him his money, right?
Right.
When the runner left, the player said, "Hey, when that money comes, is it in play?" And the dealer said, "Yes, it is." He's like, "Okay, good." Well, the very next hand, I get pocket aces, all right, and I raise it and get heads up with this guy. And he has $11 in front of him, and we get it all in on the flop, and my aces hold up. And then as soon as the pot's pushed to me, the chip runner comes over and gives him his $75 that he has won.
Mm. So you're wondering if he's playing behind?
Well, should I have been a jerk and said, hey, and before I made that bet, too, I mean, not after the hand, but before I made the bet, should I have made a point of saying, are those $75 in chips in route? In play right now, or are they in play when they actually hit the felt?
If you thought of it, you should have asked, because it's not just a legitimate question. It's just like if somebody's playing behind, they took a loan from the guy next to him, and they say, "Oh, he's playing 50 behind." It's the same thing. You'd have to know if you don't know if that money's in play, because it also would dictate how you play the hand. You know, yeah. If you had $75, you might have limped, or you might have, you know, who knows how you would have played it. So, yeah, you should have said when they said if it came to you and you were curious about it, you should have asked the dealer, okay, that 75 is going to be in play, but is it in play from right now? And then if he says no, not until it gets here, then you would know your answer. Yeah, definitely, I would have asked if it crossed your mind. I would have asked.
Yeah, well, you know, and I thought, like I said, it's not a big deal, and I didn't really care. And to be honest, he had pocket threes, and the flop totally missed him, so I think he was just throwing the 11 in.
Yeah.
And if he had more, he would have folded anyhow. So it's not that big a deal. But I guess the reason I didn't ask is here's one of these dilemmas, and new players have this too. You know, when you don't. I remember when I first started playing, and I didn't know whether ace through five was a straight, or whether it was a higher. Once you're in the middle of the hand, if you ask a question like that, that's a different question. But this question wouldn't have been a legitimate one to ask. You're telegraphing your hand a little bit, aren't you?
Well, I don't know. You know, when we watch poker on TV and you're at the table and they say, you know, in the middle of the hand, how much do you have there? You know, whether it's tournament or whatever, doesn't necessarily mean that the guy asking the question has a monster hand, is trying to get the most out of you. It could be he's thinking, should I play this hand because I can get all your chips? It could be I have a big hand and I want to know how much I can bet. So there's a lot of reasons behind those questions that can't really pinpoint your hand. So I don't think so. But so you're saying that you thought of it in the middle of the hand then, right?
Well, I thought about it. I mean, I guess this is what I'm saying. And the reason I'm bringing it up on the show is for people to think about this if they find themselves in the situations. I heard this guy ask a question, and this was before the cards were dealt, and I looked at my aces, right?
Right.
I heard him ask, you know, is it in play? And I thought that was an interesting question to ask. People should ask that, and he should know, and the dealer told him. At the time, you just don't think that there's going to be a delay.
Yeah.
And that there's going to be a delay, and you're going to pick up a big hand, and he's going to be in the hand.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it was just like a perfect storm of things that happened that made me think, oh, man, I really wish I would have pressed it. But at the same time, you know, again, I'm not a talker at the table. I'm not one of these sheriffs that has to ask all the rules and stuff. You know, I just play my hand and listen. So, but I guess what I'm saying is in the future, you know, it might be good for players to, when they hear a question like that and the chips aren't there, to say, hey, just a point of clarification, dealer, are those chips already in play or not?
It's a good thing to tell the house, too. The house should make that clear. They should tell the dealer in their meetings somebody wins a high hand today, you tell them that the minute they win it, that money is in play and you now have X amount of dollars in your stack. Or, hey, everybody at the table, this guy just won one and the money's not in play until the runner gets here and puts it in front of him. You know, that's what they should, you know, and then if it's in the middle of a hand, it's not in play till the next hand, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah. They should make that clear, especially if you're having, you know, a good dealer and a good floor or whatever will make sure that everyone who's playing knows all of the things that are going on in the room at that time, and that should be one of the things that just be part of the list. You know, that's a good question. I've never had someone hit a high hand at my table. Once in my life it's happened, and we all got $10, so it didn't make a difference, really. That was the only time it's ever happened in my entire career, so... I think that's a great question, and I think that's probably something that we could like even ask Jody or even put in the magazine for something. You know, that's an interesting, you know, try to find out what they do around the country or something, and tell our readers to be aware and our listeners to be aware of it. That's a good thing. I've never had that happen before.
Yeah, well, you know, you get it. I like bringing that stuff up so you, when you think about it next time, if you find yourself in that situation, you're like, hey, yeah, I'm not gonna get screwed like Scott. You know, the other thing too is I purposely, he had like 11 in front of me, I purposely bet 10, which was probably gonna be the bet that I was gonna make anyhow, and wanted to see whether he would forward the information that he's got 75 still coming.
Yeah.
And instead he just pushed us 11 in, and then so, but you know, nothing really changed. I think I got what I was going to get out of the hand anyhow. So,
yeah, you're right. With pocket threes, you're not gonna get his $75. But that would have been a pisser, wouldn't it? You're like, yeah, you won the high hand. Just give the money to the guy over there in the peppered hair.
Well, I appreciate you still call me peppered hair.
Yeah, salt and pepper. I think your hair still got a little bit the natural in that somewhere.
Yeah, okay. Well, I met a friend for a while, a high school friend there, and they're like, wow, were you completely gray last time I saw you? Thanks, Michelle. Happy to see you, too.
Maybe we can get Grecian Formula as, like, a sponsor of the show, and we'll give away bottles of Grecian Formula and stuff. Do some bartering with them.
All right, well, I'm excited about next week's show. You know, we've been doing all these road trips and interviews and stuff, and we've kind of gotten away from the every once in a while humorous, have fun, listy kind of show, right?
Yeah.
So we're going to do what I call the lame sitcom, very special, theme show next week. Top Poker Turkeys of 2011 in honor of Thanksgiving Day. And obviously there are a few obvious ones out there. You know, and I'm going to say right now, my turkey dinner puts me on tilt this year. I'm calling a U.S. attorney.
And one rule, too, we can't give each other turkeys.
Okay, all right, but our listeners can call us turkeys, I guess.
Yeah, our listeners can call us turkeys.
We are eligible to be a turkey this year if if the Andy Up Nation believes that we have earned such that honor.
Yeah, okay.
But no, we're looking for some creative ones sent from you guys, so we want to make this show about you, as we usually try to anyhow. So send your suggestions to podcast@andyupmagazine.com or post them in our forum at andyupmagazine.com/forum. And I even put a little post on Facebook today, too. So if you are a fan of our Facebook page, you can chime in. I already had at least one or two responses.
Very cool. Very cool.
This morning. So
yeah, we're not...
They don't necessarily have to be people. They could be things, too. I think.
Anything that's a turkey in your poker life. Absolutely. But yeah. You know, we're not going to cap it at anything. So if you want to send in a couple or whatever, and you and I are going to come up with a few. We're not sure how many yet, but...
Yeah,
you know, just
be butterball here. We're going to make sure it's only the quality ones that get on, right?
You know what? We got a hotline clip this week, and it comes all the way from Deutschland.
Are you sure you pronounced that right?
I did pronounce that correctly.
We have trouble pronouncing things on the show.
We weren't really sure how to pronounce the new world champion's last name, despite watching it on TV. Maybe it was because I was just in such a fog. It was so late. But I could have sworn I heard him pronounce it two different ways. So Marcus from Germany calls in. And he's going to tell us how to pronounce the guy's name and what it means.
Hi, Chris. Hi, Scott. This is Marcus from Germany calling. I'm just listening to your podcast, and I wanted to inform you it's pronounced Piers Heinz. And, yeah, we are quite interested what his victory will mean for the German online poker, because in general, online gambling is also prohibited in Germany, but the authorities are not enforcing it, so it's more like your situation you had 5 years ago, and we all hope that his win will not draw too much attention to the online poker, so that we are not going to encounter Black Friday or stuff like that. So thanks for your podcast, keeping up the good work, and yeah, I'm looking forward to your next podcast. Bye-bye.
Yeah, you know, I thought it might be Pius, yeah. But, you know, again, this is a problem I have. If I don't watch it, I can't say anything. But it doesn't matter. I mean, I'm sure you can call him anything you want now. He's got $8.7 million. And I think I read, and I didn't follow this up, and I hate bringing this stuff on the show if I didn't follow it up, but I think he doesn't have to pay taxes on that, is what I read somewhere.
No way.
See that somewhere?
I think Peter Eastgate should have moved there before he played the World Series.
Yeah, yeah. I need to look into that a little bit more, but maybe some of our listeners saw that as well, too. But
holy cow.
But so anyhow, but regardless, even if he had to pay taxes, he's got to be one of the happiest guys on the planet right now. So I don't think he cares about a couple little schmucky turkeys on the PokerCast mispronouncing his name. But yeah, you know, it's good to hear that people from Germany are excited about that. Not that it's shocking at all, but I'm glad that Marcus took the time to call us all the way from Europe.
And I like his point, too, about, I don't like it, but I understand his point that, you know, he doesn't want him to get too much popularity because then the government might realize, oh, my God, there's money to be won. Let's take a look at this online poker that's not legal, you know, not legal or not regulated, you know.
In the gray zone, yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. So, yeah, it's, you know, have some recognition for it, but don't go overboard because you're going to want to keep playing online. You're not going to be like us idiots here in America who can't.
You know, hey, the other thing real quick about Pius, since we're talking about him, we got an interesting thread on the forum, and I was curious what your thoughts were. I haven't chimed in myself yet, but our world champ's getting a little bit of, I don't know if it's good-natured ribbing or maybe just out-and-out disgust over, he listed as one of his hobbies partying.
Oh. Well, what? And so people don't like that?
Well, I think the point, and it was actually a serious point that on the forum is, you know, hey, and they didn't mention that we had recently been talking about this on the show, but I mean, we've been talking about, you know, the perception of poker players in the world to non-poker players, and I think some people were concerned, and it's a legitimate concern, that, you know, that kind of answer reinforces all the stuff that we were talking about that's not good, you know, you get to... this 22-year-old kid in a hoodie that says his favorite hobby is partying, and he just won $8.7 million playing a game of cards. Does that help us? I guess I have to take that seriously because I brought that up on the show, you know, a couple weeks ago. But, I mean, I guess the flip side of it is show me a 22-year-old who has $8.7 million that doesn't list partying.
Exactly.
It's one of his hobbies.
He's a human being, so it doesn't matter if he's a poker player or not. I mean, for someone who has a 23-year-old in his life, you know, my stepson, I mean, the first thing he would list and the last thing he would list is partying. So, I mean, you take it for what they are and who they are. It's not, oh, poker players partiers, although a lot of them are, and we can't deny that because it's the lifestyle. You have to make a lot of money, you got to spend it somehow and entertain yourself, and that's how they do it. But... this kid, he's a kid. I mean, he's literally a kid. We can't forget that, you know? I mean, it's kind of like the people who are, you know, geniuses from birth, you know, and you forget they're just so intellectual and so mature, and when they throw a tantrum, what the hell? Why are you? Well, you forget. They're kids. They're kids, you know? Just because that they can play a game that grown-ups can play or play a game that mature adults can play and play it better than you – doesn't mean they should act like you. I mean, these are kids, and I don't put that against them, man. I'm not a partier, obviously. I'm a teetotaler. But when I was younger, I mean, I might have put something on there like, you know, stacking idiots, you know, or donkeys or something, you know. I mean, because you know, because that's what I did for a living. I played poker for a living at 23. That's what I'm gonna say. So I don't. You know what? If he made a negative light about poker players, I'm not gonna hold it against him. The kid's 23 years old, and he's a great poker player, and he deserves to say whatever he wants to say. As long as I don't find it offensive. Are there no partiers in the world? Is anybody getting hurt because he parties? No. So I understand what you're saying, the perception of poker players, but good
right,
God.
I think that's the point. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like he said, like hanging up people by their fingernails and torturing them. You know, I mean, give me a break.
All right, Marcus, we appreciate you calling our hotline, and we are going to send you a download of the Poker Hand Breakdown Pro Hand History Analysis Program for single or mixed games from element26.net, and don't let the popo know you have that. We want them to be sure they don't shut down online poker there in Germany for you. And everyone else, call the hotline at 813-448-1120, and we'll send you some wonderful stuff as well.
Our mailbag comes from David. He says that he wants to talk about playing with a maniac. He had an interesting 1-2 no limit game recently. He won a large pot, had about 650 in front of him. Next hand, the player to his left who has been randomly raising and going all in blind.
Love those people.
Yeah.
Actually, I hate those people, but love them. Love stories about them.
And so he says, and it seems to be his highest EV move. He goes all in for $65. He folds around to me in the big blind, and I'm preparing a fold, queen six, when his opponent starts begging for a call. I finally say, and then there's some sort of funny word here that has a lot of asterisks in it.
hey, but, it's a family show. I had to censor him a little bit.
We'll substitute the heck with it and call. And he hits a four-card flush with jack-deuce offsuit.
Excellent.
The next hand, he bets $50 blind, mid-position. Then mid-position goes all in for 91. And in a small blind, I have pocket tens. I raise to 150. Big blind looks and mucks, and I lose the hand to pocket aces. Next hand, the last hand before table closes for attorney, the guy to my left goes all in blind again for $78. Middle position goes all in for $58, and I have king-jack and call as well. The board comes down jack high, and I scoop the pot, while mid position complains he was hoping to be heads up with an all-in blind as he shows jack four off suit. I thought, why would you want to be heads up against a guy playing blind with jack four off suit? Of course, then I realize there's not much difference between jack four and queen six off suit. So how would you adjust your play for a guy playing this way when he has a $50 blind bet? Should I have found a fold with pocket tens? How should you play to take advantage of the opportunity while not calling off too weak? Sorry, I should have edited this because I can't read very well when I don't read edit
That's
it
right.
myself.
You did all right. We'll get the Jane and the dog books back out. We'll work on it.
A good question. Very good question. I ran into this a lot when I played down in Sarasota. There were a couple of guys down there who just shoved blind, hoping to get a big stack and not really care about their money and push people around. Yeah. And
my advice is get up.
Yeah.
And that's just me. I come to the poker room to play poker. I don't come to the poker room to play bingo. Now, obviously, there's profit potential here, and that's what he's asked for. How do you exploit this for potential? To me, I want to play poker, and this guy isn't playing poker. He's playing bingo. He's just shoving, and yeah, sure, you could do all kinds of math, and there are things you can do to figure out whether you've got the best of it or not, but then you're not playing poker anymore. You're just playing a math problem and hoping you get lucky with it.
I go to the poker room to make money. So
okay, see, well, that's the difference.
Yeah,
that's a good point.
If I had no choice, like, in other words, the tournament's starting and there's nowhere else for me to play and I want to play and I don't want to go home and have to work on the magazine or something, I would probably just wait with big hands. And like he said, should he have folded the pocket tens? Not a chance in hell.
Yeah.
And I just wait for big hands. Now, of course, you know, the call with the queen six, that is not big. That's not even average. That's not even the computer hand. So
yeah.
That was kind of crazy. The king jack, still kind of crazy because there's another person going all in who's probably doing what you were hoping to do. Even though he did have jack four, you couldn't possibly have known that. So I don't even think I would have called with the king jack. But, you know, I knew one time I had this situation. There was a guy down at Sarasota, like I said, and he had done it a couple of times. So finally I had ace queen or ace jack suited. And, I mean, his range was absolutely horrid and he kept doing it every hand. So finally, he was two to my left. I waited till I limped, waited till he did it. Then it folded around because I knew no one else was going to call him because they didn't unless they had big hands. And then I shoved behind him, got him isolated. He had like 8-5, and I doubled through him. And that's how I did it. I waited for a big hand. So that's what I would do if you want to play with these people. But like Scott said, if you want to actually put people on legitimate hands and play real poker and not have to do this because you want to enjoy yourself, just get up and find a table if you can. If you can't, then play big hands. That's what I would do.
Okay.
I mean, to get his whole stack. Now, if he decides to change the way he's playing and then he starts playing legitimately again, well, then I would, try to play quality hands against him. But I would open my range up, though, of those quality hands. It wouldn't have to be, like, top three or four hands because, he's not playing big hands.
Yeah, and the other problem I found when there's a maniac at the table, it's not so much the maniac because you start focusing on him or her.
Yeah.
Whoever that is. But the problem is when they're in a hand, you still got other people at the table with you.
Yeah,
and they're all trying to figure out how to get that guy's money as well, too. So, I mean, the situation where, hey, all right, I'll call him now. I think I've got a hand back. But then three other people come along thinking the same thing. Then it kills the whole idea.
Yep. Yeah.
So, I mean, it gives you some limited opportunities where you're really last to act and have full control over what you're doing. to take advantage of it. Otherwise, you know, you still got to play against the other people, and it just gets too confusing, I think.
I was fortunate that the rest of the table was still scared of the $80 bets, the $100 bets, or whatever.
Yeah.
And so I knew they weren't going to call. Yeah. So I didn't care, because I play poker the way I need to play. If I sit down with the money and I can lose it, then I'm going to lose it. It's not going to change my life. So I was making the proper plays, and that was pretty cool. Because then I think you were playing stud at the time. I walked down here. I'm like, I already have 600 in front of me or something. You're like, what? I think it was 400, and you're like, what? I'm like, this guy keeps going all in blind. You're like, table change, you know. But well, that's the other thing too. You could do is if you know he's a maniac, get a seat change if you can. Try to get a seat change and have him on your right so that you can react to what he's doing rather than, you know, not being able to limp with hands you want to limp with or whatever, because you know he's just going to shove behind you. But if he's acting first, then you can adjust. So try to get a seat change too.
Sure. All right, David, we appreciate you sending that in, and we are going to send you a T-shirt from PMS Pokerware, which sells hilarious shirts for gals and guys in the Annie Up store at annieupstore.com, and maybe we'll get him to make a suited Queen Six is the new Ace-Ace shirt for you.
All right, well, you know what? I looked at the call to floor this week, and the first part, the actual question, is shorter than the answer.
Yeah.
So given my reading ability, I'll read the first part. You read the second part.
Okay.
This is a good one, and it's for Jody. So this comes from Mike C. Sent it via email to us. He said, the tournament set up at my local poker room seemed very odd and, to me, ruining the experience for the players. They fill up the tables with stacks, whether they have sold them or not, and they keep them out there for a few levels. They blind them out, then remove them after a couple levels. Does this seem fair? What if I have the button and the big blind is an unregistered stack? Do I know that I can raise an early level and only the small blind can go over me, or I can have position heads up? Of course I can't. Many times there are small two- or three-table tournaments and three seats per table are unregistered. We are now playing a stupid game within a game for a few levels just waiting for these stacks to get removed. Yesterday was the kicker. The tables were filled, but there was a player that re-entered after busting out early. He gets a new stack, and the tournament director seats him and says, I have to blind your stack some because you were a late re-entrant. She takes one round of blinds at the current level, 75-150, and says to the dealer, put this 75 in the next pot, and then the one after, put 150. So now we are playing splash the pot in a tournament? What happens if two people pick up a hand? I'm already going to add 100 to my preflop raise if I get something, and what if I pick up two people? Now the pot is bigger than that than the level. Why is that my fault? So I understand what he's saying. He's like, what's going on with these stacks and everything? So what did Jody have to say?
All right, this is what Jody said. He said, having dead stacks in a tournament is a result of a room trying to accommodate as many players as possible in a tournament by allowing late registration. It is good for the game, in my opinion, to do this. I've seen some rooms try to hardline their start times for a tournament, and it usually results in the loss of players for that room. In bigger buy-in tournaments, most tournament directors like to bring in the dead stacks by the end of the first level, but in smaller daily tournaments, it's more common to see the dead stacks left out until late registration has closed. This is fine considering there is normally one person taking registration, keeping up with the money, seating new players, making floor calls, and anything else that may arise in the process of getting the tournament going. By leaving those stacks on the table for a couple rounds, it eliminates the need to balance tables early, move players around, to start a new table when several players show up late, moves more players around, or to calculate and remove blinds from stacks when new players are seated. As far as this practice being unfair, I disagree. In situations like this, I have learned to tell people that it is equally unfair to everyone. Some crazy players actually like having those chips in action without anyone to defend them. The practice of letting players to buy back in the tournament, not to be confused with a rebuy tournament, is something I've only seen done at the Sahara in Las Vegas before they closed their doors. It was a small daily tournament. Everyone was aware of the buy back in policy, and it was quite popular. This procedure is being followed by the room you're playing consistently during certain tournaments and is made available to all players. There is nothing wrong with that. You are simply playing a tournament in which you can buy back in. I personally wouldn't take the blinds away from a player who was buying back into a tournament that allowed this, but as long as the procedure is being followed consistently, you know what to expect. If I were to take the blinds from a new player, I would follow the same procedure as a tournament director in this situation by putting the chips in the pot over more than one hand, but would have followed the natural course of the big blind amount first and then the small blind on the second hand. It seems to me this tournament director has been well-trained and pays close attention to her tournaments.
Yeah, I have to agree. I don't have a problem with dead stacks being out there. And you know, if we're all subject to it, it's not, and it's better for the room to have more players in a tournament. It's better for you, you know, when they, if they could buy in late, you know. And again, you know, the other thing too he mentioned was, you know, would you have one person who's doing all this stuff for the tournament, from taking the buy-in and yeah, make, you know, you have one person doing all that. It helps to have some backup there like that. So I agree. I like it when there's dead stacks, because I know that I can steal those blinds a lot easier.
Yeah, it's free money.
Yeah, it's free money. So what do I care? Yeah, so I don't really care.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I was a little surprised to get the email, just because this is pretty commonplace now, I think, at least the terms I play, you know, with the dead stacks. Now, yeah, I'll say no one really enjoys having sit down at a 10-stack table with three live players. You know, it's not fun.
Right.
But I also understand why it is, and Jody makes a great point in the first part of his answer. You know, if you are a strict poker room and say, hey, at 7 o'clock, who's in is in, who's not in is not in, you're not going to see a big field a lot of places for that tournament. I mean, you know, I when I go to the poker rooms, I usually, even when I don't play a tournament, I like to watch the clock and see, you know, the number of players entered. And sometimes I've seen tournaments start with 12 players that end up with 50.
Yeah.
By the end of the late registration area. And so if you were to stop it at the start, you'd have a 12-player tournament. And then, I mean, that's bad enough in itself, but then people will know, hey, all right, if I come tomorrow, it's probably going to be an under $12 tournament, so I'm not even going to register at all. And then you run the risk of the tournament never going off. So I really like the late registration, and I think the dead stacks are the way to do it. Now, the buying back in, again, I mean, this is a way to increase the prize pool.
Sure, absolutely.
I mean, you're turning one person into two people. Yep. At that time, which is amazing. I mean, even science can't do that. I mean, really, you should want. I think you should want that in a tournament, because it makes the prize pool bigger, and it does change the play a little bit. So I can understand that, but definitely need to let. I have no problem. I love buyback in tournaments.
Well, just make sure you ask everybody at your table, hey, if you get eliminated, are you going to buy back in? Then you know how to play against them. But the other thing too about the time strain thing, you know, hey. It makes you have a different point of view of whether or not you're going to drive down there. If it looks like, oh, the tournament starts at 7, it's 10 of, I might not get there by 7. But if you knew you had 20 more minutes, you might still get there at 7, and you might get there at 10 after, but you can play, and that might encourage people to go. Whereas the other way, they're just not even going to try. You know, if it's 7 o'clock and it's 10 before, and they know they're not going to want to drive all the way down there and know, I can't get in if it's 7:01. So they want to have that buffer where they can have a couple of minutes late and still play. So you want that there, believe me. The tournaments will dwindle if you don't.
Well, yeah, and I guess the other point to think about is if they don't do the dead stacks, it's not so much just that you have one person doing everything and it's easier. I mean, think about this. If you don't have the dead stacks and you've got 18, or let's say, 27 people in a tournament, and it's a three-table tournament, all right, you're filled, right?
Yeah.
So then you get a late entrant. Where do you put them?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess you could... Let's say, just for the sake of the argument, it's a 30-player tournament, and you got it's 10-handed. Now, where you put an extra 11 around the table? Some places might do that, but if not, then you got to wait until you get. We got to wait to get that player in the tournament until you've got another table, and then if you're already playing 10-handed at three tables, do you have to wait till you get 10 players?
Yeah, you're not going to take
to get them all
two
in, you
from
know?
The other or, three tables. You're not going to take two, and two, and move them to another table and create a fourth table only to break it in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
You know.
So it's just a procedural thing. I mean, again, I'm not picking on our letter writer, I mean, because he makes some very valid points. But, I mean, this is the kind of stuff that I think players don't take the time to think, well, why are they doing this? They're not just doing it to screw me.
Right.
There's got to be a reason they're doing it, and trying to find out what the reason is. And I give our letter writer credit, because he wrote us to find out why they do it. And I actually exchanged a couple emails with him, too, and... he gets it now, and he's happy for it. So
it also makes it... By putting the stacks there, you know, you have to put the stacks there if you're going to have late registration. Because if you don't, like you were saying, if you bring someone in, the other thing too is it makes it easier for the dealer to keep pulling the chips off when it's their blinds. Because what if it went around two or three times if you were short-handed?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and then when he gets there, what do you say? Oh, you only take one blind away from him? No, and then the dealer has to keep track of how many rotations went around. You know, that's not going to happen. And then it's not fair if you only take one blind from the guy when he actually had to, you know, if you'd been seated, he would have lost four blinds. So it's just another thing to keep track of how many rotations there are and how much he actually would have in his stack had he folded every hand. So
yeah,
it's just a lot of reasons to do it. Okay, our feedback. We're finally getting the feedback on the show this week. We've been so busy lately.
Jeremy Ronzio sent this in about 7 years ago.
And, yeah.
We just put it on the show notes, and we keep taking it off because we keep blabbering too long. But Jeremy, your day in the sun is now.
And I think we both actually emailed him about this, too, because I'm pretty sure we did, because I remember this letter, like, a while back, and it was pretty funny. He says, I was recently playing crappy No Limit Hold'em at a friend's home game when the player on my right checked behind on the river with the nut flush. I believe he just misread his hand, but he is also very new to the game, so I spoke up and advised him of his mistake. Here's where the fireworks began. The whole table practically erupted in anger at me. Like it was my fault. It didn't occur to me till then that I was the only person who knew of this rule and that I would have to explain it and, in a sense, also defend it against the entire table. The general consensus was that regardless of what hand you have, no casino or poker room has the right to require you to do anything with your chips. And then they said, quote, if you have the nuts on the river, then you aren't risking your chips. It looks like too much like collusion, he said. Finally, the host spoke up and proclaimed that if I could find a credible source where it is written in plain, easily understood English, then he would accept the rule and start enforcing it. Where can I find this rule written where it doesn't sound like VCR instructions? And then he said, second, should I have just kept my mouth shut since I was the, quote, new guy, or maybe just let it die when I saw my opposition? How do you guys handle these things in home games when an unpopular rule is broken, either by accident or simply because no one likes it and therefore ignores it?
All right, well, let's start with the second one, I think. No, I don't think you should have ignored it. I think, you know, you're just bringing it up. I mean, you certainly weren't expecting a firestorm.
Yeah.
And I guess it depends on how you bring it up, and I'll give you the benefit of the doubt that you're like, you know, hey, no big deal, but, you know, in a casino, you would have got a penalty for not betting that. And then it's kind of a soft educational kind of bringing it up rather than, yo, you can't do that penalty.
Yep.
That would be different. But no, I think you absolutely should bring it. If you don't bring it up, how are people going to learn about it?
Well, exactly.
It's going to keep happening.
You know? And then what rules do you bring up then? Do you not bring up other rules like exposed cards or, you know what I mean? Or, you know, what the hell? You got it. It's a rule and you know it. You should let your buddies know. And if you did it like a normal person, they shouldn't have any problem with it.
Yeah, and you can have a discussion. And, you know, it's a home game. I mean, it's not a casino. So you can decide, you know what? I don't like that rule.
Yeah,
we're not going to have it in our home game. All right, that's cool. That's fine. But, yeah, you got to bring it up at least, I think. Well, I think it's interesting, too, about this is that, you know, we were proofing the pages last night, and this came up out at the Isle Blackhawk.
Yeah.
And it's amazing to me, this last couple of months, it's coming up a lot. So I guess maybe it's more people are learning about it, so it's coming up more, and maybe that's going to help get the word out about it so it doesn't come up more in the future. But very interesting. But you know, so he wrote this in and said, you know, where's the rule at? And I love the doesn't sound like VCR instructions part. So I'm like, all right, this is gonna be no problem. I'll just go get the rule from the TDA, right? So I go to the Poker TDA, www.pokertda.com, and they don't really have a clear rule that addresses this.
Right.
Surprisingly.
Right.
Now, what they have is they have a rule that Rule 54, ethical play. Poker is an individual game. Soft play will result in penalties, which may include forfeiture of chips and or disqualification. Chip dumping and or all other forms of collusion will result in disqualification. And so, you know, that's – and I know exactly what his friends are going to say. Like, that doesn't say you can't – you have to bet the nuts.
Right.
It doesn't say specifically that. And then you have to explain to them, well, that's – soft play, and they're not going to get it, right? So, you know, I searched the discussion forum at Poker TDA, and there were actually quite a few threads devoted to this with some spirited arguments arguing both sides. I mean, this is really this whole forcing to bet the nuts is really a contentious issue in the Poker TDA for members. So it's not something that everybody agrees on, obviously. But, you know, I think we did mention on the show a while back, there's another organization out there, very similar to Poker TDA, called the FIDPA, and I can't remember exactly what the acronym stands for, but they actually do have a specific rule. It's 53-6 that says, in certain situations, a player with the last right of action that checks an indisputable winning hand, the nuts, will incur a penalty and may be found guilty of soft playing that may result in disqualification. So there you go, Jeremy. You can take that back. But, of course, my favorite part of this rule is, in certain situations, may and may. Two mays and in certain situations. Way to be definitive there, folks.
And for the record, I think we had this last time, too. It's the Fédération Internationale de Poker Association.
Thank you very much.
But it's international, so that's, you know, hey, you can appreciate it and go to your buddies with it. So, and all you got to do is say the FIDPA, then if you don't want to, you know, that obviously means poker.
Oh, it's just impressive, yeah. Oh, so. Okay, FIDPA, that's not
true. But I think that... it's weird. I can see both sides of it. You know, you shouldn't have to do anything you don't want to do, as long as it's not a, you know. But at the same time, it's how others would perceive you by not betting it, and you don't want that. You don't want to be perceived as someone who could be doing something shady or whatever. So, and why wouldn't you want to bet the nuts? never know.
That's always my argument. I'm like, when people get upset about it, I'm like, seriously, why? You couldn't lose. What's the risk?
Right.
And I don't buy these arguments where, oh, I was just trying to, or I didn't think you'd call. No, I mean, bet it. You never know. There's no risk. That's my bigger thing.
But. I guess there's a risk in cash games, though. And this is tournament ruling, so that's why we don't do it. But like in a cash game, if the rake is only at $1 and you don't, you know what I mean? There's a reason to do it then. And I don't know if that rules in cash games or not. I've never actually had it happen.
Yeah, but you know, again, I would think, you know, that bet's not called, it doesn't count towards the rake.
Right. Well, I'm just thinking the amount you bet. If you bet $2
Yeah, but I can't imagine a scenario. I'm sure as soon as the show is over, someone's going to give me one. I can't imagine a scenario where you would bet, you'd get a call, and it would cost the rake, that extra dollar or two in rake would cost you more than the money you're winning from that player.
Yeah.
Unless it's a split pot.
Yeah, I was going to say, in Omaha 8.
That's one, a split pot, I guess, but...
Yeah, interesting. Well, interesting. Very interesting situation. That's why poker is such a... It's got to be like the Constitution. It has to be a living, breathing document. You know? It has to flow and change with our needs. You know, it's never going to have definitive things in it, I don't think so.
Yeah.
All right, we've got a little housekeeping to go over here real quick before we get into our news desk. Don't forget our Annie Up store. We have Annie Up logos there and dozens of other poker products. They make great holiday gifts. It is the holiday season. By the way, this year for Thanksgiving, we're having surf and turf. No turkey.
No turkey?
Yeah, isn't that weird?
That's not weird.
Oops. Yeah. We'll see. I can't wait to try to carve that lobster tail. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah. I think for me, it's the only time of year I have turkey is Thanksgiving.
So yeah, that's true, too.
That's why it'd be weird.
Yeah.
And I don't know why that is. I mean, turkey's a good bird.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good. Tryptophan.
All right. And be sure to check out our new state pages, our individual state pages at AnnieUpMagazine.com. Go to the Where to Play section for links to all the poker rooms and state-by-state maps. And again, remember to check out the 2012 Poker Cruise schedule at AnnieUpMagazine.com/cruise. Three great cruises, March 17th out of Tampa, August 27th out of Port Canaveral, and November 10th out of Baltimore. And still time to get on our December 10th cruise out of New Orleans.
People still booking for that one?
Yeah, I booked three more people this week. So.
Jeez, crazy, man. Poker players. God,
yeah,
they wait till the last minute. Just crazy. Yeah. All right, what happened on our news desk this week?
All right, the World Poker Tour has added two stops to its 10th season schedule, January 5th in Dublin, Ireland, and February 6th in Venice, Italy.
It's just growing, baby. It's growing.
Do you want me to authorize a business expense so you can fly to Venice?
Yes. I was going to ask you that after the show.
Oh, okay. Venice isn't probably where you want to go, though, right? You like the other parts of Italy better.
Well, if the business is paying for it, I'll go to...
You'll go anywhere.
I'll go to any hole in the wall in Italy there is, so don't worry about Venice. I'll definitely go there.
It'd be great if they had the games on the gondolas.
Yeah, I was wondering like how we're gonna work a gondola joke in there, but
leave it up to the ugly Americans.
According to VegasInc.com, the Nevada Gaming Control Board will start taking applications for internet poker licenses in February. Actual online poker will be restricted to the state of Nevada and only if the federal government allows it.
Yeah, this is one of those news items that I really resisted putting on the show, but I couldn't find anything else. And the reason is that, not that it's not news and it's not worthy of talking about, but this is the kind of item that people get cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs over without actually understanding what it means. You know, the headline makes it sound like, oh my gosh, we're going to have internet poker in February, woohoo! But that's not anywhere close to what this means. It's just going to start taking applications, which obviously takes a while, and then they're just going to sit there until the federal government approves online poker, and then it's just going to be intrastate.
Yeah.
Not interstate. So, really, kind of a nothing story.
Yeah. But, hey, you know, that's what we're about, nothing stories.
Absolutely. All right, finally, and I love this, too. Artist Zephyr Thrall's latest work is a revolving cast of 48 participants playing a game of strip poker in the window of a Manhattan studio. The performance piece called Raise You One will be at the Art in General Gallery until this Saturday, so run out there and be a juvenile.
Oh, my God, Raise You One. You can interpret that a lot of different ways.
But they did have a little blurred out pictures on some of the stories I read, and it's interesting. I'll give the guy, you know, I'm into art as much as the next one, but it's just fine. People just playing poker there and taking their clothes off. And then,
hey, you want to know where there's a lot of performance art? Venice, Italy. You want to go see it with me? We'll all go. All right, fresh baked out of the oven, a brand new O'Malley's Move.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. We're still at that HOE game, but this time we're in the $1, $2 No Limit Hold'em round, and it's about 2 hours later. We'd gotten down to 100, but have worked that back up to 175. The table has lost two players, so we're down to six-handed. On this hand, we're in the big blind, and it's folded around to the small blind, the same player we had gotten tangled up with earlier in that Omaha 8 hand. His hold'em game is better than his Omaha 8 game, but we're still confident playing against him, especially in position. He has about $450 now, and he raises it to $6. We look down at the Ace of Hearts, 8 of Diamonds. Well, this isn't the strongest hand, and normally we'd probably throw this away and just move on. But we do have position, and he's raised our big blind from the small blind three other times tonight. So we're going to defend this one. We make the call. The pot is $12, and the flop comes Ace of Diamonds, Jack of Hearts, Three of Spades. A pretty good flop for our hand, although we're still unsure of where we are, and we fully anticipate our opponent to put out a C-bet, which he does, of $8. Now we have to find out where we're at in this hand. So we raise it up to $24, and our opponent wastes no time in calling. Since there aren't any draws, he's got to have some kind of ace himself. Perhaps ace-king or ace-queen? The pot is $60, and the turn is the Eight of Hearts. Well, this is a pretty good card for our hand. We've now sucked out on him if he is in fact holding ace-king, ace-queen, or even ace-ten. And again, our opponent leads out at us for $30, exactly half the pot. A raise here would certainly make us committed to this hand, but can we just call in this spot with two pair? Or is there a case for a fold?
Our long road trip is finally done, Chris.
Well, it's not done till the show's over, but yeah, I know what you're saying.
All the time we traveled, and then we've stretched this thing out over like 2 months.
Yeah.
Reporting it to folks, so... but very excited about this. You know, we broke this up. We tried to break it up more into a usefulness kind of segment rather than chronological, right?
Yeah, and if anybody wants to complain, you tried doing almost 7 years straight of not missing a show and doing topics. Good God. We got to take advantage of it when we can. I was pushing for this to be an Arizona-only show and then have you do a St. Louis show to get one more out of them.
Trust me, I tried to figure that way out to do it. Couldn't do it. But no, so this week's show is going to be Arizona and St. Louis. And we started this whole road trip in Arizona, and we ended it in St. Louis. So that's what makes it kind of funny.
Yeah, it's kind of a road trip sandwich.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So, and remember, you can go back and listen to our past shows where we did L.A., Southern California, and Northern California. And this will be the last one in the series. And we'll remind you folks that always that we did not go to every room in these areas, just the biggest ones, but go to our Where to Play pages, and you can get a link to all the rooms in that area.
I'm getting a little weepy now, so let's start it.
All right, let's start with Arizona, where we started this madcap journey. There are 7 rooms that ring the Phoenix metro area, a few more southeast down in Tucson. Interestingly enough, there's no true no limit there, since the maximum bet is $500. But that's certainly good enough for me
as
an Olin player. You don't see me making a lot of $500 bets. So I was really impressed with the variety of games that we saw. We saw Omaha and some Limit among the offerings at most places. So, you know, every time we go on the trip and I see Limit and Omaha, I'm like, gosh, please bring it to Florida.
Yeah.
It's a big stay for us not to have Limit or Omaha here.
Yeah. And we, if you want a little more in-depth explaining why they have this $500 max bet, it has something to do with the tribal stuff, and we ran a column about it a few months back, so you can find it in our archives on antiupmagazine.com. But yeah, I mean, for us, it's fine. I guess for the guys who have, you know, millions of dollars burning a hole in their pocket and they want to go be able to play a game that they want to play, it kind of sucks. But you know what? If you have that kind of money and you live in Arizona, you could just take a trip over the border and go to Vegas. So
yeah, short flight to Vegas.
Yeah, but but yeah, I mean, for us, $500 bet is fine.
Absolutely. Well, the trip started off interestingly enough. You know, we had an experience, I guess you could say, with our last rental car of this trip. Little did we know that the first rental car we got would be a harbinger of the rental car madness that we'd have. We got there, and you know, the same company that screwed us at the end screwed us
in the beginning front end
by giving us a Suzuki Swift with 43,000 miles on it.
43,000.
This car had so much damage that the entire car was pre-circled on the damage form that they gave us. You know, normally they give you the blank form, and then you have to go around yourself.
Yeah.
They gave me the form, is already circled. They already did all the circling for me. And they put a note on there, stained seats. And they weren't lying. You looked in there, it looks like, you know, somebody gutted a deer in there or something.
Oh, man, it was pretty gross.
Easily the worst car I ever rented. Easily.
Yeah, it was pretty
nasty. And I rented some clunkers. But, you know, hey, it got us around. It almost got us arrested, too. Because the last morning, we had a very early flight. We're driving to the airport, and we followed the GPS, and then I violated the GPS, and I thought I knew where I was going, and it took me around the other side of the airport, so I was getting frustrated, and... it was raining, I think, too, right?
Yeah, it was cloudy, and yeah, it was dark, still dark.
And so we're getting close to where I think we need to go to the rental car, and all of a sudden, airport cops, woo, woo, woo. And I turn to you, and I'm like, are you kidding me? Am I getting pulled over for speeding in the airport at, like, 5 in the morning? And you immediately, I like this, I appreciate this, you defend. No way, man, you were speeding. Like, thank you, great, tell the cop that. So, you know, I roll down the window, and the little popo comes up and is like, you know, hey, you got no taillights. We're like, the minute I was relieved. I'm like, oh, okay, great. It's a freaking rental car, dude. I really thought I was going to have to argue with him over going 43 in a 40 speed limit zone.
I'm freaking out, too, because I'm thinking, all right, Scott gets a speeding ticket. Do I have to pay half? Because if I have to pay half, then I think I'm going to start driving more on these trips. Because I don't know if I'm comfortable paying for his idiocy. You know, why is he speeding when we're 2 hours for the flight? And then I was like, no, it's a taillight. So I'm like, all right. And then you were like, oh, this freaking car, man, the taillight should be on. And I'm like, you don't have the headlights on, so the taillights aren't on. You're like, oh, it's not that dark. And I'm like, you got to put the headlights on. Oh, it's the car's fault. I'm like, it's not the car's fault. Put the lights on. The taillights will come on. You thought they had running lights. I'm like, it's a Suzuki. We're lucky it has lights.
Lights. And, of course, that whole exchange happened when we got to the garage. Fortunately, the nice police officer let us go with a stern warning to get it immediately to the rental car. Place, and then we get there, that's when I realize you know, I forgot to turn the lights on, but I still blame them. I'm sure if I turned the lights on, the taillights were malfunctioning.
If they gave us a quality car, I would have had the lights on automatically.
Absolutely. But fortunately, this all happened after we made our trip, and again, we spent just one day there, but our first stop was Talking Stick at Casino Arizona, and wow, my jaw is still dropped on the ground at how nice this place was.
Yeah, it was huge. And what I liked about it too was that it had like the sort of, you know, hey, you're in the Mecca kind of thing. You're here, but yet you can still play what you really wanted to play there. It was really nice. And it was nice to look at too, the dark browns and you know, as far as aesthetically pleasing and stuff, it was really nice. You know, it's funny how fast it got to be that, the big kahuna, as you like to call it. Because it was literally just like 2 years ago, they had a poker room in tents.
Yeah.
You know, and now it's just the biggest room in the state. And very beautiful. 47 tables.
I love talking to the manager there, Kent Oakirk. Everybody calls him Ode. In fact, actually, we even tweeted that we were in town and we had a good meeting with them. And they, when they tweeted us back, they're like, oh, we love Ode.
Yeah. Yeah.
But great guy. He's been around forever, too. The definition of a character. He says he's been there 13 years, I think. Used to work at Fort McDowell. And was proud that they're the first poker room in the state to be non-smoking.
Yeah. Yeah. And one of the things, too, we found out, what I like about some of these trips that we make are, you know, all these poker room managers, they just love to talk to us. They love to open up about things, and they tell us about other people that we're going to be visiting or people that we all know in common, and so we get a lot of information about these managers, like who we should trust or who we, you know, who's not very good or whatever. And he was no shortage of knowledge from this guy. He's been around 13 years at this place alone. He comes from Iowa, so he had some stuff to say about Iowa too. And it was great, you know. And they also had another guy come into the office. And he was one of those prop players who also works there. And he played in like a, I don't know, what did he say? Was it a 20-40 game the night before? Or was it bigger than that?
It was a big game.
Yeah, it was bigger than that. And we said, wow. So we asked him, we said, you know, is the reason that there's not true no limit here why there were such big spread limit games or limit games? And they said, absolutely, that's got to be the reason why. That, you know, these guys want to make, they want to win a lot of money, they want to play big poker, but they can't play true no limit, so they play big limit, and that's what it was. It was like it was a huge game. I can't remember what it was now. Maybe it was like 100, 200 or something. But it was a really big limit game they were playing. So they're like the home for big limit games.
But from there, we drove over to Fort McDowell, and it used to be the big kahuna in town. But working really hard to try to regain that glory. The room is now in a new, smaller room, closed off from the rest of the casino. Had a great meeting there with Mike Byrne, who's, I guess he's the director of casino ops, right? Not just over the poker room. But he's been there from the start, and he said he was the guy that dealt the first hand of blackjack in Arizona.
Holy cow.
They're doing some really interesting things, too. I love to see these rooms that are scrappy, that are trying to get business however they can, because they really are player-friendly. And their room, it's a $3 plus $3 rake structure. So it's only $3 that goes to the house, and the other $3 is a jackpot rake, so it comes back to you in player promotion. So, you know, consider that at here in Florida, it's usually a 5-1, or actually even 5-2 now. Think about how much that means to you as a player, regardless of whether you like jackpot rake or not. You know, the house is only taking $3, so, you know, if a casino's taking $6, you want them to take as little as they can in the rake and more is in the promotion. So,
notice how I stay quiet when the ache ray word comes up.
Yeah.
I'm not saying anything. Let's say, you know what they have there? They have NFL parlay cards.
No, I love this promotion.
It is. Yeah. It's cool. You know, you check the games, I guess, that you, you know, you pick the games, yeah, or if you pick the most.
You win
whatever.
A parlay card.
Yeah.
Based on your play, and then you can pick the NFL games on it, and then you get a payout based on how many you get right.
Yep. And one of the things we saw, too, is one of the first rooms we saw. We saw it in other places, too. But what I thought was really cool was when it's Monday Night Football or Sunday Night Football or whatever it is, Sunday Football, they have, you know, the games on the TV. But, you know, you can't turn the volume up and listen to it because the place would just be – you'd all blur into this, you know. So what they do is they put the radio station underneath the frequency that's broadcast in the game for you so that you know if you have your little radio with you or whatever, you can listen to it in your headset while you're watching the game. So that's pretty cool. I like that. They did it at the Commerce, too, and I think one other place. So at least two or three rooms that we saw on this trip did that.
Absolutely. And this room feeds players three times a day. It's like a soup kitchen.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible.
Three meals a day you get there, plus you get comps on top of that, too. So, you know, really, I mean, if you're looking for a place that wants to roll out the red carpet for you, you know, Mike Byrne's doing it there. And they got some interesting charity events, too. One of them just happened, right?
Yeah, I think the other one's happening this weekend, so it won't really help, I think. I'm not sure. But, yeah, they had, like, a lot of famous baseball players live out there because it's Arizona, you know. I mean, that's where they played their fall or their spring training and stuff, so a lot of them make homes there. So a lot of them come in for, like, fields for kids and packages for troops and stuff like that. So they do a lot of good stuff with charity, and they're really doing a lot of things for the players there, and it's a shame that they've actually suffered some setbacks, and I hope they do rebound. And there were some really funny stories he told us. I mean, the show's probably getting a little too long for them, but we may bring it up again in the future, maybe if we have him on the show or something. But yeah, he had a lot of good stories for us.
Great guy. If you stop and see him, ask him to tell you a story.
Yeah, absolutely. He's hilarious.
All right, next up was Harris Auction, and unfortunately we weren't able to meet anyone, but it's similar to most of the other smaller Harris rooms, WSOP everywhere. But the highlight of this trip, I thought, was walking into the casino. Chris, my big tough partner here, he melts like butter around animals, and I love it because I have a soft spot for animals too. We walk up here, and there's this little tiny owl sitting on the ground, and you would have thought that it was like plane tickets to Italy there. Chris is like, oh my gosh, look at that! Gets his iPhone out, and he's doing the proper lighting and stuff to take a picture of this owl. The whole time while he's trying to do this, I'm looking on the other side of the walkway, and there's another owl that looks exactly like this one.
Yeah.
I don't know whether they're a boyfriend, girlfriend, or brother, sister, or whatever, but it was almost like Harris paid them to pose there for Chris.
And they were literally the stack of 20 chips high. I mean, they were so small.
They really were.
I mean, it was like you could put them in your pocket.
I'd
never seen an owl like that. I mean, ever. Like, in a live setting. Obviously, I've seen them in, stores or, pet stores or something like that. But I'd never seen a wild owl 5 feet from me. I was like, Scott, look at this. It's not like when we were driving in South Miami and I said, look at the trees. You know what I mean? This was cool. This was an owl. So the picture I took really didn't come out that good either. I wish I'd had my normal camera on my shoulder. But, wasn't it cool?
Really,
yeah, it was the coolest little thing. So that was cool. And the room was nice. I mean, it was a nice room. It was, for what its needs were. I wish we could have met the manager or whatever. But, what are you going to do? Poker's poker wherever you go. I wouldn't recommend it, and I would not recommend it. It's a poker room, and it's nice, and it's Harris. So you know what to expect when you get there with the total rewards and everything. So we didn't really get a chance to talk to anyone.
If you love owls, though.
That's the place to go. And he was like in a storm drain or whatever. Because it was a walkway that went between two like reservoir ponds or whatever.
Yeah.
And you could tell he was like living there. And he was kind of like guarding the entrance. And that's probably what the other one was doing, was waiting for us to walk by so it could go home or whatever. It was cool. I had a lot of fun with it. Look for the owls.
We closed our trip at the Wild Horse, which is one of the two Gila casinos in town that offer poker. Vikiva? Quiva?
It's Vikiva.
Vikiva?
Or Vikiva or Vikiva?
Yeah, oh boy. Where? I totally messed it up.
I think it's Vikiva.
All right, well, whatever it is, it's the only words in town that start with a V and start with a Q and have a couple other letters. So you'll be able to find it, trust me. These are run by husband and wife team. They were looking forward to seeing us. Unfortunately, one of them suffered a loss in the family, and they couldn't be there. So I really feel bad we didn't get a chance to meet them. But absolutely gorgeous, the Wild Horse is. I always never know what to expect when I walk into these rooms, and it's amazing to me how many times I continually am impressed. Because, I've been to, it seems like, 500 casinos in my life.
Oh, yeah. At least.
And to continually be impressed, I think, is saying something. And this was really nice. I really had a good time visiting that room.
Yeah. And it's the bigger difference between, paramutuals and casinos. You know what I mean? When we come from, most of our places are card rooms that are inside paramutuals.
Absolutely.
And they started with meager, beginnings, whereas the other ones, they launch it with casino money. You just really appreciate these nice places. But unfortunately, we didn't get to meet the husband and wife. We make it out there again. You never know.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And then we'll segue into St. Louis by mentioning our great ambassadors, of course. In Phoenix, we had a drink with Joe Legier.
I'd say Legier.
Legier.
Yeah.
He's our Phoenix ambassador. I had a fun conversation with him about Full Tilt. And then at the end of this trip, I was in St. Louis, obviously, which we're going to talk about next, and had a great dinner with our St. Louis ambassador, Don Matisofsky.
There you go.
We went to the my wife's got this favorite place called the Blackthorn Pub. It's a little pizza place out in the middle of nowhere. And I should say not in the middle of nowhere, but just not where tourists go. And so we shared some deep dish with him, and he actually even gave me his drive home, which is good because I needed to drive home. but no, great ambassadors. We really love all the ambassadors that we have. And remember, you still got opportunity to get in. We're looking for somebody at Seattle, somebody in Ohio, and then, of course, you know, never know when we're going to need somebody else. So go to antiupmagazine.com/ambassadors and apply.
So now I'm going to go have some lunch. And I'll let you talk about these last few rooms because I wasn't there. So just tell everybody what you found, and I'll be back in a little while.
All right, St. Louis, I think, is an interesting poker market. I mean, I've been there before, obviously. My wife and I go there often. And I've only played at the Lumiere Place, which is downtown near the Arch. Great room, and I'll talk about that a little bit more. But there's actually four rooms in the area. Two of them are out near the airport. First one is Ameristar St. Charles, and I was not prepared for the size of the overall resort. My wife and I were driving up, I'm like, oh my gosh, look at this thing.
Yeah.
It's like Foxwoods, but of course it's not like Foxwoods, because I've never seen Foxwoods, but it's like the Foxwoods of Missouri. It really was massive. The poker room's really nice. They're just kind of, you know, fighting a tough battle in that market because Harrah's next door. Really is where all the action is, and then Lumiere Place and River City are trying to up the ante as well, too. But nice poker room. You know, if you get a game there, you're going to be comfortable playing there, I think. But certainly the Big Cheese. I like how you edited my notes there.
Yeah.
To avoid me saying Big Katuna for the eighth time in the show.
Well, you
foiled that plan.
That would have been the first time you said Katuna, but it would have been the third time you said Kahuna, so...
but no, Harrah's is where all the action is now. It's a home to a circuit event in April. While I was there, they just announced the winter tournament series is going to start the first week of December. And a couple weeks after I was there, they had their first what they call the big game. $10, $25 blinds, $15,000 minimum buy-in. They really, really promoted this well. And it was helped by the fact that they have the final table show. Is broadcast there every Tuesday at 3 o'clock at, conveniently, the final table in the poker room.
Yeah.
Really cool. I was lucky to be a guest on the show. Paul Harrah's is the host of it. Dennis Phillips is the co-host. He used to be there, but now he lives in Vegas, so he calls in for it. But, you know, there's not a lot of poker rooms that have radio shows broadcasting live from them every week. So that's definitely a good... something that's a little different there, but certainly a lot of action in this room, a lot of games going on. The circuit event draws a huge crowd, and they're expecting a big crowd for December, so definitely a big place to play when you're in St. Louis. And then, of course, I mentioned Lumiere Place, which is right downtown, so if you're in town on business, don't have a car, or a tourist, that's probably the room you're going to play in, because it's easily walkable near everything, from the Arch to the Landing. Very, very nicely appointed room. Only 13 tables, but very nice. And then River City is its new sibling. It's outside of town. You'll need to drive to get there. It's newer, but I think more posh. They just recently did a lot of renovations for it. Very, very elegant. Some nice features there as well, too. And they get some interesting different games, some different limited games going there and some other things. And the plans is a hotel, but not until 2013. But they're anticipating when they get that hotel, it's going to be a big draw for tourists as well, too. But and they're without a real director of poker operations right now. They're interviewing some folks right now. So I think once they get somebody hired, you're going to see a lot more coming out of those rooms. But it's certainly something new in St. Louis.
Well, and just a reminder, too, that Scott wrote a lot more detail on this in our most recent issue, December, coming out in a couple of weeks, so it'll be online, and of course it'll be in your poker room near your favorite place to play. So make sure you check it out. Scott did a good job with that to give you, you know, a nice insight on what they normally spread in their rooms and what's going on there. So, and of course the Arizona and the California ones will be in the magazine in ensuing months. So take a look for that. All right, let's move on to our hand of the week.
All right, we're back to the situation of the week.
Yes.
I know you get real excited about that. So.
Yeah, because now I can have some more lunch. I can let you do it.
You know, and this was sent by Dan England's iPhone. Now, Dan has been a frequent contributor in the past. We appreciate that. But I'm always impressed when I get these long emails from iPhones. Because, you know, you watched me on this last trip type a long email on the BlackBerry, but I did not enjoy it.
Yeah.
And the iPhone, of course, I don't have an iPhone, and I still don't understand the whole touchscreen and how you got it. It looks frustrating to me. So I big kudos to people that type out long emails on iPhones.
Yeah. What's good about this is that you knew that he basically probably just happened to him, and he's like, damn, I might as well do this now while it's still in my head.
Yeah, that's true. You know? That's very true. It's fresh. All right, well, first of all, he was excited. He got to finally play live poker. And this is Colorado where he lives. He said that he was there. It wasn't as crowded, but still a good experience. He's playing 1-2 no limit. And remember, in Colorado, there's a $100 max bet. You know, it's kind of interesting because Minnesota's got a max as well, too. Yeah. And Arizona, of course, a 500. It's really interesting that these jurisdictions have these max bets. But he says, you know, $100 max, but it still plays like no limit. He gets tens in middle position. They're just tens, Dan. there's one limper in first position. He raises to 10, our hero, hoping to thin the field. He did that with nines earlier and did get heads up and won a decent-sized pot. And he's now up about 150. And he says, in parentheses, Chris now says, of course he is.
Of course he is.
all right, so remember, he raised to 10. He says this time he gets three callers, the button, and the two blinds. Flop comes seven of clubs, tray of spades, deuce of spades. Small blind bets 20. And he wants us to discuss right now, I guess.
Okay. I don't believe him. I don't believe the guy who bets 20 has me beat. I don't think if he flops a set, he's betting. I think he's, you know, at this level, generally, people like to check raise with a set. If he has a flush draw, then obviously I'm going to, you know, raise anyway. So I don't think he has a set of sevens or threes or deuces. I really don't. And if he does, I don't think he would have bet him. So if he has a flush draw, I'm going to raise you anyway. So I'm raising here, and I'm probably raising probably to 60. I'm probably raising to 60 here. And if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But I don't think the guy's got tens beat here.
All right, well, our hero folds, and he said his flop seemed to fit a limper, and he's got three people behind him to act still. He said, it seems like an obvious hole to me, but I've seen so many at these levels lose so much. My other thing was, I was up already, it's just tens, and I was at least one of the best at the table. So I guess the overall situation is, how do you handle overpairs? But I'm going to chime in with what you said, too. I told Dan I thought this was a tight fold.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of understand the reason why, and you got tens and, you know, blah, 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 but... I can't imagine somebody in the blinds hitting this hand and betting into you. I mean, it's very creative if they do, but I mean, if you're playing, I guess if you're just trying to set mine, then why are you raising preflop? I guess
right.
And if you're not trying to set mine, then this is the kind of flop you're looking for.
Yep.
Aside from a 10 on it, obviously.
The other thing too is I don't know if what you said you would do yet, because I don't know if I like a call. Because if I call, one, I'm calling for the price that this guy set, which means that if he has a flush draw, I'm letting him hit his flush for the price that he felt like hitting it for. Plus, I have three people behind me now can squeeze me with a big raise. And if they make a big raise, then it's like, all right, you know, but if I make it 60, then they're not squeezing me. They have a legitimate hand. So I don't know. I don't know if I would just call here. I feel like a call is too weak and a fold is really weak. I think I need to make it like 55, 60 to go.
Yeah, I wrote him that I misplay the situation all the time. I do think it's a difficult situation, but I would definitely want to raise here to find out, you know, whether this guy really has a set.
Yeah.
Or called our raise to $10 with two of the following. Flop the seven, the tray, or the deuce, which I can't imagine either. So, and there's no straight on the board right now either. So, really, the only thing, unless he has like, you know, jacks or queens or something that he thought he would just call and see what happened. Really, I think you can dismiss a lot of hands that have us beat.
Yeah, I just don't feel like I'm beat here. I feel like this guy might have A7. you know, and he might think we have ace king and or something like that, and a bet would take it down. But I just it just feels like if it's a set, he wouldn't be betting out. I just don't think he would, especially with all those people behind him, that he knows someone's going to bet this flop probably to try to thin the field, and then you could re-raise him. So I just don't feel like a call is right here, and I know a fold can't be right with three unders. I mean, there's some draws there, but,
yeah, you know. Definitely, but, yeah, boy, if you're folding here, I don't know why you were raising pre-flop.
Yeah, so. Why are you playing the hand?
Sorry, Dan. I guess we're picked on you a little bit too much there, but
yeah. But you know what? He got to play poker live finally, so that was reward enough for him.
But you know, I guess let's talk about this a little bit too. What he mentioned is, you know, hey, I'm already up. This seems weird. This guy's betting into me with this crappy flop. You know, should I put my stack at risk? I'll just ride off the $10, and I still got, you know, 140 or so.
There's argument for that. The other thing, too, is what kind of player you projected to be the entire time. Are you the type of guy that would only raise with overpairs so that if he knows that you have an overpair and he hit a set, it's a smart play to bet into you because you're thinking exactly what we're thinking, that, you know, there's no way I hit the hand and I have an overpair, I'm good, and I'm going to take it to the mat. But if you're a tricky player and he didn't really couldn't put you on that kind of a hand, then betting out just raises a lot of flags to me. Like, you can't have me beat. So I guess it just depends on the type of player you are, too. All this stuff always depends. And that's why I always laugh at some of the people who, you know, they try to put a mathematical figure on all this stuff when it's just strictly black and white sent to us. There is no way for us to know what these people play like or what Dan's image was like to know why this guy bet into us. You know, it's hard. Right. But if you're just doing an ABC... Basically, ABC players would check raise you with a set, so, and may not even bet you with a flush draw. So I feel like it's A7, and we're ahead, and that's why I did it.
Yeah, and it's also a flop, too, where somebody could bet from the blinds. To me, it's a hand where people could bet from the blinds and try to get people to think, oh, my God, this guy was playing garbage, he's in the blinds, he hit this,
yeah,
and get you the fold. Or that he knows it's a flop that probably didn't hit anyone. So if you were raising with ace-king or something and you're betting in, there's a chance he'll get you the fold. So, I mean, obviously, our opponent played it well because he got us the fold. We don't know how the rest of the hand worked out, whether he won it right there or not. But, yeah, I see a lot of reasons for our opponent to bet here and represent something and be able to take it away from us. But I think we have to say, hey, I'm calling you on that.
The only hand that I'm afraid of in this situation and would make sense that he bet maybe would be the 7-8 of spades, because he's hit top pair, because I would play 7-8 of spades with three callers or whatever,
right,
and I'm already
right,
in the blinds a little bit.
Sure.
So I have a flush draw and I have top pair, so I think I might consider betting here and knowing that even if I'm wrong and I'm still behind, I can make two pair on the turn or a flush on the turn and be ahead. So that's the only hand really that I'm afraid of. I really am not afraid of a set here, I don't think. Maybe jacks, but I think jacks might re-raise. You know,
yeah, I was going to say either jacks or sevens. And I could see people not raising with jacks from the blinds. I don't think queens, and certainly not kings or aces. It very well could be nines or eights, too, which is great. We haven't had all.
Yeah.
I'll disagree with you. I'm not really scared of 7-8. I mean, obviously, it's a hand I would like to have in this situation. But I still got tens right now.
I guess afraid's the wrong word. Statistically, we're probably behind 7-8 is what I'm saying. So it's the only hand that would warrant a bet because they think they're ahead, and statistically they probably are, or a better chance to win, not ahead, but chance to win. So, yeah, I think afraid's probably the wrong word.
Well, you know, you raised a 40 here. We're going to get our answer somewhat on what this guy has. You know, one, if nothing else, we're going to get the people behind us probably out.
Hopefully.
There's no way this flop hit four people.
Right.
Or if it did, if it's a flush draw, no one's going to call 40 on a flush draw. So at least you're thinning the field down to heads up with this guy. And if he re-raises you, then, you know, then you got to think, you know, hey, is he doing that with eights or nines, or is he doing that with jacks or sevens? And then you got a thing there. If he just calls, then maybe he'll check the turn, and then you can either check behind or bet, do whatever you want. So raising just gives you so many more options here, I think.
Let's see. He said that... There were, what, three callers?
Well, yeah, he said it's three collars, the button, and the blinds, and then he said he had three people act after him after this, so I... So there were three or four people in the hand.
So, yeah, I mean, one of them could have been set mining, though. That's the other fear, is that one of them was set mining. But, again, you can't live with your head, you know, in the sand. You gotta play hands, so...
But, again, though, if somebody behind you has a set of trays...
You'll get your answer.
They're going to raise as well, too, I think, because you got a better and you got a raiser now. I mean, at that point, I'm not slow playing my set at all.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're right. So I think, I don't know, maybe
40 is
enough.
I'd be willing to put 40 in just to find out where I'm at here.
Well, do you think a call from the first position guy on that tells you any information, though?
Well, it doesn't tell me.
Like, let's say they all fold and it gets back to the guy who bet 20 and now he just calls.
I don't think that call tells you anything, but what he does on the turn will help you.
Yeah, maybe.
Because remember, he's going to be the first to act, so does he decide just to check? And like I say, if he checks, then, you know, hey, maybe I'll just check behind, keep the pot small, and see what happens on the river.
Yeah.
It gives you that option. I'm not saying that's what I would do, but it gives you that option that he doesn't have. And if he bets into you again, then you got to think, why, when I raised, did he call and then still bet into me?
Yeah, what's the answer to that?
but I don't think that would happen. I mean, I guess that's just it. I mean, it's so weird that I don't think that would happen, so... I mean, I'm either thinking I'm going to get a raise from this guy, which at that point, you know, unless I really can put him on eights or nines, I'm fine just saying, hey, $40 was fine and folding.
Right.
Or he calls, and then he checks the turn, and then I've got some options on what I want to do on the turn.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. So we don't find out exactly, like, what the guy's had for hands then, do we?
No.
Brutal.
Choose your own adventure at home.
Well, let's make him feel good and say the guy had a flush draw that got through on the turn or something.
Yeah, there we go.
Make him feel better.
Yeah. All right, Dan, we appreciate you sending the hand in to podcast@antiupmagazine.com. Of course, you are swagged already. But everybody else send that in, and we will send you an uncut sheet of J-Design playing cards, the official playing cards of Antiup. You can only win the uncut sheets, but you can buy the cards in the Antiup store at antiupstore.com.
Don't forget, next week is our top turkeys of 2011. Send yours to us, and maybe you'll make it on the show. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Antiup is a production of antiupmagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@antiupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.